Welcome all to the March 16th Aries Working Group call. I hope you survived the Ides of March. And this is a hyperledger call, so the antitrust policy and the hyperledger code of conduct is in effect. I hope to speak excellent to each other and avoid any legal cumbrances around our work. I will paste the agenda link in the chat again because Zoom likes to hide that for new additions. You're welcome to add yourself to the attendees list or make any other associated adjustments you'd like. Is anyone new here today and would like to introduce themselves? We are glad you're here. Announcements. The Interopathon is this week, is it not? James, Kim, am I correct?
Yes, it's on Thursday.
Yes, so this last time you get to hear about it, but one of the things that is being tested is, in fact, the out-of-band invitations instead of connections invitations as part of the process of the community coordinated update to make that transition. So there's a link on Cardia app. Scroll down a little bit. You can sign up and join for that. So the Discord link seems to be nice and active, which is great. So this is the last time I'm going to bring that up. The identity call is not tomorrow. I clearly didn't go through these very well. And the Discord move. Okay. Also, unofficial announcement. I don't know if you saw, but there's actually a possibility that daylight savings time will become permanent. For those of us that just went through that and everyone else that sort of suffered a shifting calendar, it's passed the Senate, has to pass the House, and also the president has to sign it. But we're saying there's a chance it would take effect in 2023. So you'd still have to fall back in the fall, spring forward next spring, and then it would stay. Anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. Any other announcements that are not on the list that should be? All right. Any release status or work updates for projects that you are working on or represent? No work status updates? All right. We have, Timo has requested discussion of three particular issues raised in Aries RFCs. And so we're going to start there today to make sure that we get it done. We also have Kim is going to be talking about an idea he had for out-of-band invitation compression. And then this was another late ad Timo wants to talk about, did auth pre-credential. Timo, I'm not sure I titled that correctly, but that's the order of things that we're going to hit to try and make sure that we get to all the things that we want to discuss. Any adjustments to our agenda that we should make before we get going? All right, Timo, do you want me to drive or would you like to drive the issues?
You can drive. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so I've got them up here one at a time. These are all opened relatively recently, and I imagine are sort of urgent for a project to figure out. So I appreciate, Timo, you asking to have these under discussion so that we can figure them out.
Yeah. So I think these are a few I think we got from implementing Presentation Exchange and the out-of-band protocol. I think this one is related to there was some ambiguity in what should happen with acknowledgement messages, because you can either send an ACK message, but an ACK message can also contain a status fail, but you can also send a problem report. And it looks like the RC always, like, if something goes wrong, you should just send the problem report. So we were wondering, like, what is the meaning of a fail status ACK in the present proof protocol? I think this would also be the case for issue credential.
I would say it shouldn't be there. I don't think you should ever send an ACK with a fail.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was our initial thoughts also. So maybe we should add then some wording to the RFC that in case of a problem, you should always send the problem report and not use the status in the ACK except for OCK.
Yeah. So you're saying 454 should be updated, but do you think 15 should be updated as well to remove fail?
I don't know. This is probably from before the problem report protocol existed, or
they came about together, but I certainly based on usage and everything else, I think it should probably be removed.
Yeah, I agree. I think it does have it does probably have some changes in how things maybe work, because we have the please ACK decorator, which means you should send an ACK message. We should probably then update the please ACK to mention that in case of a non-acknowledgement, it should send a problem report instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then I think that's clear.
Yeah. Is my note accurate here?
Should be an ACK OCK or problem report, not ACK fail, need to plain text and add it to relevant RFCs. Yeah. Can you add please ACK? Also update please ACK decorator.
I can take that one if you want.
Yeah, I won't say no to that.
Produce a PR. The only thing I'm going to do is I'm going to send a Discord right now to Daniel saying, is there any reason an ACK should have a fail?
Yeah.
And get him to look at this issue. Okay.
Okay, I've assigned you, Stephen, and feel free to just include the whole link to this for Daniel. I suspect he may care. Or have some wisdom there. All right, done? Okay.
Next one is for Data Exchange, we need to sign the attachments. And I think that is mostly because I think at least for the connection protocol, it was you could use a different key for an invitation than you would for the actual connection afterward. So you would need to sign the connection response with the key you used for the invitation to be able to prove like I'm still the same person, I'm just using a different key. But do we also need to validate, do we need to check for the keys being used in a DID document, especially when using pair DIDs? Because normally, like you can't trust that any of these keys are actually from the person that the keys are from the person, because it's just a plain DID document that they shared with you. But they say you need to verify it, but what if you have an inline pair DID? So the DID is not actually attached as a DID document, but rather like the DID pair encoding, what's it? I think two, where you encode the whole DID document inside the identifier of the DID. We weren't sure of what should be done.
So there's another fun accident of the timeline here, in that at the time that DID Exchange was written, there wasn't a pure DID method too. So there wasn't a way to do this. So your question is a good one, and to help sort of resolve that development. In my mind, an inline DID, meaning DID peer method two, is the same as having an attached DID document, functionally speaking. So you could either have an inline. So if you specify the DID, you don't really need to attach the DID doc because it's inline. Mm-hmm. Or if you're doing it the traditional way, historically, then the attaching the DID document is still what you should do. It's worth noting that in DIDCOM V2, the inline DID option is the only way. There's not a way to attach a DID document. So if you're wondering on whether you want to update this or not, the answer is you probably do, because then you'll be one step closer to handling this sort of a thing in DidCombi too.
Yeah, you would suggest then to use method 2 by default.
Yes, although we need to still be able to parse those that attach a did document instead for the time being.
Yeah, I know. For example, I looked at the AirShimmer Go implementation and they only support method 1. So it would be good to support at least that one, for otherwise we would be not interoperable. But what does that mean for the signature? Does that mean I would need to sign, add a signature over the did document? And then when I receive it, I would need to decode the method 2 pair did identifier into a did document and then verify if the signature has been made over that document, or?
I could be wrong here, but I think the signature is from the previous key, authorizing the transition from one key to another.
Okay.
Do I misunderstand that?
No, I think that could be true. I just couldn't really understand where exactly the signature was for.
So if you, the proving ownership of the keys you're rotating to is not, hasn't really been viewed as a functional problem, in the sense that if you claim ownership of a DID that you don't actually have ownership over, you just are simply going to be unable to converse because you don't have the keys. So it's technically possible, but like really dumb practically, because it doesn't help you to make any progress there. And so we weren't as very concerned about that. The signature is from the key used in the invitation in such a way that authorizes the transition from basically the key used in the invitation into the DID that is being responded. And this prevents someone from intercepting the data or intercepting the request and responding back with, I realize this is hard, technically speaking, but responding back with a different DID than intended. So you have to have the key or the private key used in the invitation in order to sort of authorize that rotation, or I mean, we call it rotation in DidCombi too, to the DID you intend to use for the relationship. So in that case, it's not the key in the DID that you're trying to verify. I think it's the key that you're using, or that you used in the invitation.
Yeah, that would be my thought, but the DID exchange protocol requires the request message also to be signed, or the example at least says that. And that makes me, like, if you send a request, the other party doesn't know your key yet because they only received the invitation. So it's the first message you're sending. So you're not rotating from any key. So in that case, signing the request message is useless.
Okay, Data Exchange Protocol 1, we're looking at, there's an error, that's not helpful. Here's the request message.
Yeah.
And so the signature here is a JWS across the DID document itself. So it's a signed attachment. So I think this still rings true, by the way, that an inline DID is considered resolvable.
Yeah.
Which means the DID doc attach doesn't need to be included. Okay, but back to this topic. That is slightly in conflict now with this, but we talked about that. Okay.
Or is the example in from the request message not like it shows a signature, or is that copied from the response message and shouldn't it be there? Or
I'm inclined to think it should be. Otherwise, we may have caught it sooner than this. If anyone has any more wisdom than I do, please speak up.
It may be worth noting that further down in the section under request processing, it says the responder should check the information presented with the keys used in the wire level message transmission to ensure the match.
Down here?
Right there. Second line in request processing. Yeah. Might be relevant here.
Right. Yes. So you're basically making sure that the message is received. The keys line up. So here's the request. And the request is sent from the consumer of the invitation, right? And they're providing a DID to the other party. And they're encrypting this to the key present in the invitation. And they're basically claiming a DID. And they also encrypt the message using the keys associated with the DID. So the responder here, to get back to where's that highlighted section here. That was really good, James. Here you go. You want to make sure that that it actually matches, right? That they encrypted it using the same information that was in the DID. And that actually proves the key ownership anyway in that manner right there.
Yeah, but okay. So that's what it needs to be, because that you could check that currently without needing to add a signature on it. And I'm also, because currently there is like an overlap between keys for authentication and encryption, but I'm not sure that's going to be that way, right? So I'm not sure, what should we verify then? Should we verify the signature, or should we just verify that the key used for encryption is in the DID document, in the request document?
Right now you want to make sure that the encryption keys match between the message as it was sent and the keys in the DID document itself.
Okay.
So, but then that's what that line means that James pointed out, right?
Okay.
So I'm looking for, there's like no references of signed, right? I'm trying to find the details here. This is dumb, but of the signature here in the exchange request. Because we show a signed attachment here. So there's the base 64 value of the DID doc itself. But I'm trying to look up what actually.
Yeah, so this is also what I was running into. Like, there's very little content to, why it. I don't think there's any. There's a few mentions of the word signature, but only referencing that the problem report could be sent with invalid signature.
Yeah, we only, okay. Yeah, you're right. There's only examples of the signature, and then there doesn't appear to be a stated reason why the signing had occurred. Okay. So Timo, I'm going to, unless someone else has something to offer, I'm going to take this offline after the meeting and I'll dig through. I suspect it might be that in the transition from connections to DID exchange, we like didn't pass along some information that was present because it was all in our brains at the time. And so it missed getting in here. And so we can figure out what the mechanics are there, but I'll go ahead and resolve to take this and give you a straight answer after the meeting today.
Okay, thank you.
So I think I've assigned myself. There we go. Okay, it's just slow. Cool. Okay. Next one. That's not the next one. Next one.
Yeah, the phone number is very simple, and I'm not sure we should do anything with it. But in the DID exchange request message, the label is not is required, but in the OOB invitation is optional, which means that whether you're either the invite or the invitee, in some cases you're required to give a label, and in some cases you aren't, which feels a bit inconsistent. Like, is that, is this by design or is this not by design?
I don't think the inconsistency is by design. It's worth noting and mentions here that this is not an assertion in any way. This is just self-attested. And so this is not critical, but you're I think correct in pointing out the inconsistency here. Any thoughts for those that have implemented this, did exchange with labels?
I would definitely agree this should be optional.
Making it, well, the change of making it optional will make that anyone who's absolutely depending on it, they're going to have to update their code in order to sort of bring in line with this. Which has the further implication of being an update or a clarification to AIP2.
Yeah.
Which feels like a big step.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it is worded for like this to update it and make a break and change. It's just,
What about taking a lame middle road by adding a note saying this should be optional, and in the next upgrade, this will be changed to optional?
It could be. I'm hoping the next upgrade is we don't use it anymore.
Well, that's true.
I say that as a loving part creator of what we've got now.
Yeah.
But I think that adding a note and resolving and noting that, yes, this is inconsistent, but changing it, you know, had deeper implications at the time might be okay. Right. Yeah. Producing a new AIP, in the future, we could resolve that.
Yeah.
But again, it may not be worth that.
Maybe we could just add the note and add to the note that, like, if you don't want to use an attribute label, you can use an empty string or something, because that won't break the rules, but you aren't sharing any label.
Although I don't know that it's super critical that we provide a way around this, right? There doesn't seem to be a compelling reason not to provide a label, even though you're correct in that it's inconsistent here.
Yeah.
I think that would be honestly useful to indicate how, because the optionality is nice. And so being able to not provide a label, but not actually break interoperability, I think that would be nice to specify.
It could be. An empty string could be an unexpected thing for folks to receive. Technically, you've always been able to send an empty string, but I can see implementations trying to display this in a way that would end up being confusing. So perhaps an alternative to an empty string is some seminal value where you just send like party or connection or something. And that way something actually shows up because it's not an empty string. Bob, we should make them all be Bob. I'm kidding.
I think that is a valid approach. I think it, at least from my perspective, there's a little bit more concern of that. Often the invitee is the holder of the interaction, and that is where the privacy matters a little bit more. So if they don't want to share a label, then I don't want to do so. If that makes sense.
Yes. In all likelihood, this isn't really the holder that's deciding. It's the software that the holder users is using that's deciding.
True. So if the application that we want to craft, for instance, we are not including the label as part of our process, but we would still like to be interoperable, it would be nice to be able to have a clean way of indicating that or processing.
I do agree. Any thoughts on maybe what a seminal label could be for the standard? I'm not going to tell you, but here's a value.
Curran?
Did you get to arm debate wrestle for which Curran?
Yeah, we'd have to debate on how to spell it, though.
I would throw out connection. Well, you threw it out, but does it seem terrible to me?
Any thoughts?
I'm not sure if we should set it to anything besides an empty string. Maybe an empty string is also not a good thing, but I don't know if you don't want to share anything, then have to be forced to be at a certain string, which in implementations that haven't adapted to it would just render it normally as the connection name. So then you're forced to be able to use labels that you may not want to use.
How about unknown? Unspecified? That's semantically correct. Perhaps the empty string is the right answer. Any thoughts? Is that good? Or is that better than another value? Is that likely to cause fun?
Maybe we would be able to leave that up to the implementer who's doing that. Say they can either use an empty string or a predeterministic value. So. Because given their use case, it may make more sense to not display have an empty string or actually display something.
Okay, I've got a note there. Any volunteers to make a PR to update this?
I can take this one.
Timo's got this one. Perfect. Okay. Awesome. Okay. Are those addressed to your satisfaction, except for the one that I haven't addressed yet?
Perfect.
Timo, thanks for bringing this up. I want to highlight that because this group exists to serve the community. And if there are issues or things that you want to talk about, those are things of high interest that we get done. So I'm grateful, Timo, for your bringing this up. And we can talk through these things. And that invitation is open forever to everyone. We put together agendas in the case of trying to have relevant conversations, but the most relevant conversations are the ones that people care about. So, thank you. Next on the agenda, Kim has added some links here to his section about out of band invitation compressions. I'm going to turn the screen over to you, Kim, for this next section.
All right, can everyone hear me?
Yep, we can.
Awesome. We recently switched to adding support for out-of-band messages on one of our projects. And one of the things I noticed is that the QR size, QR code has become difficult to read due to the size of the data in the URL. And so the thought here is, how could we reduce the size of the data without doing a redirection or any of that type of behavior? And one of the thoughts that came to mind was using compression. When I used standard compression libraries, I was only getting about 10% reduction in size, or maybe 15%. And part of the problem is the size of the out of band message itself. You know, we're only looking under a K or maybe a K and a half worth of data that we're trying to compress, and compression algorithms don't lend well to that size of data. So I started looking at Z standard compression using a trained dictionary. The trained dictionary allows you to create a dictionary ahead of time with data that might be common in the data set. And there's an article here that has a section about it, about dictionary compression. The concept is to train the data on various data sets looking for commonalities. And then you can use that dictionary during decompression. And so here I describe a little bit of how I trained the data, this particular data set. Basically what I did is I created a bunch of out-of-band invitations. Right now the out-of-band invitations are pretty plain and straightforward. And so I extracted the data required for the invitation. And then I stripped out any keys because keys don't need to be in the dictionary. And then I trained the dictionary. And what this has done is it's taken the size of an invite URL, in this case, 794 bytes, to about 370 bytes. So, you know, we got about a 46.6% of the original size. And you can see the difference in the size of the QR codes here. There are a couple different ways that we could arrange that if this is a desirable behavior. One is that we could provide a, instead of calling it out of band, we could call it like COOB for compressed out of band. We could add some compression details to the header here. But those are all kind of nitty gritty details. And I was kind of curious with these results here, if there's interest in the community on pursuing such a compression functionality. Obviously, you know, this works okay for this particular data set because of the data I passed in is pretty compressible. We might want to add other trainings, you know, other keywords and phrases and things like that into the training set, so that other invitations are more generically compressible. And then the other thought here is we could, there's already a redirect on redirect support that people are adding for invitations. And so we could have a fallback mechanism if the client can't understand how to decompress a compressed out-of-band message, they could follow a redirect where they try and resolve the URL on the host, and the host will be able to decompress it itself because it has the dictionary available. Dictionaries would have to be either shipped or downloaded to clients. And obviously dictionaries, we wouldn't want to change all the time because then we lose some of the benefit of being able to have simpler QR codes. Anyways, so I'm open to feedback on the concept. Any questions?
So I will note that at the time where we briefly discussed compressing these and came to the same conclusions you did, this method of compression was not something that we ever considered. Basically training it on a dictionary of the common spots. What this does is it means that all of the common elements of an out-of-band invitation, which include, you know, the message itself and everything else, become crazy small. And the remainder is basically the unique bits, the keys and the endpoints and the other sorts of uncommon or not standard things as part of that message. Steve, you said, where does the dictionary reside? The dictionary would need to be created more or less by the community and would reside someplace where the community could get it. It's also, in Kim's example here, he has a way to indicate which dictionary. There's a D equals one in the URL, which indicates that this is dictionary one, and that provides a sort of known upgrade path. Should there be a reason to compute a new dictionary, you can specify that. One simple place that it could live, for example, is next to an RFC in the Ares RFC's repository, with some sort of predictable name, such that, you know, if you're looking for dictionary number one, you can go get it. It's also, I think, unlikely that we would frequently create new dictionaries. That would be an uncommon thing, which means that that could just be something that you either embed the dictionary inside of your, and the dictionary wouldn't change once it's made. It would be considered immutable. So you could either embed it in your software, it's relatively small file, or you could simply retrieve it from the URL and cache it. Timo, your hands up.
Yeah, I have two questions mainly. First, what is the main reason you would like to use compression over retrieving the message remotely? Because that is a way that allows smaller QR codes, and to get it, that I think already works. So it's adding another step of complexity. And I think most of the time you're like, then you have a scan to QR code, but then you still need to send an HTTP or like a message to an HTTP endpoint. So you're still maybe for offline use cases, or what's the main reason for this?
Yeah, so there's two reasons. One is there are some problems with using a redirect URL. Depending upon the complexity that the end user picks for a redirection URL, those could be potentially compromised. The other benefit here would be if the dictionary was shipped with the client, then offline use would be capable here. Whereas redirect URL patterns may require the client to have a common HTTP access or network. So Bluetooth or other connection protocols would benefit from this methodology.
Okay. And do you know, like, if, for example, the peer did method specification uses for the method to encoding, it also uses, it uses a map of commonly used keywords in DIT documents and has abbreviations for it so that the identifier is shorter. Do you know, for example, if we define one for out of band invitations or like ARIES in general and pick the most common words, because there's some pretty long words that we could reduce a lot, whether we could already get like a significant improvement? Because I think it would be with something like this, we would need to train a model, you would need to bundle that with your implementations. It's often, it's probably in some native libraries that you need to make sure you can use in your environment. I think it adds complexity. So wondering if just creating, like listing a map ourselves, can already help a lot in this case or not.
So there are some benefits from using compression on plain text versus non-plain text. And that's why we already get some benefit from using a compression library on just plain text environments. So by using just standard compression, you know, we can reduce the size by 10%. And that's something that I don't think we would gain from using shorter keywords. The shorter keywords would definitely give some benefit in the size. So the question is, you know, where's the effort worthwhile?
So I would add a thought here that this has some additional complexity when you consider redirection, right? Or retrieving the message. The difference though is a little bit that it's a little bit of an exchange of one complexity for another. The advantage of the redirection is you can get a smaller URL than you can with compression, just because of the unique values of the keys, et cetera. But I do I do like the idea that this could be, you know, parsed completely offline. I this is one of those things that I'd wish we had considered in the very beginning of this, because I think it was an option that we didn't really consider to be reasonable at the time, just because compression itself wouldn't give us very much. It gives us a little, and having that extra 10% is nice.
All right, go ahead, Steve.
So my concern with it, I agree sort of with Sam. One of the points I was going to make was what Sam said, which is if we'd done it from the beginning, it might have been better. I think the dictionary could go inside the out of band, I think, so that it's part of the out of band RFC. I think that would be the only way to do it. Like, I can't see remotely getting a dictionary or something like that would be a good idea. That would be a bad idea. My problem with it is eventually they become too big. Like, this will not handle all cases, and a redirect will handle all cases. And so that's kind of why I lean towards redirects being an infallible way to do it for all cases, versus this works for many cases, but will not work for all.
Have you considered, Stephen, offline devices, with devices that don't have internet connectivity in your all cases statement?
Mm. Okay, good point. Yeah.
Steve McCown?
I had a different kind of question. I do like the idea of employing encryption or compression. Since we're in essence linking to the dictionary, which acts on how things decode, would we want to include the dictionary in the signature of the out of band message? I know we're specifying dictionary equals D equals one up there, but a number of attacks have been carried out by changing Bitcoin address wallets on websites. And so I don't know what the theoretical attack or corruption might be, but would we want to reference that dictionary somehow in the signature of the message for integrity?
As far as attack vectors go, the signatures that existed in the message before it was compressed could still be verified after decompression. And so I think if you pick the wrong dictionary, typically you'll just get erroneous data coming back out of the system.
Well, yeah, that's true. Like I say, years ago, we were doing encryption with Europe's IDEA algorithm, and they employ some S boxes, which are magic numbers, which are akin to a dictionary. And we had one digit and one table off by one bit, and it caused some unattended side effects, meaning every 64,000th block would repeat. And so it seemed like it worked until it went through the testing. And so that's why I'm a little sensitive to let's take a decoding mechanism and put it somewhere where it can be linked without including its integrity in the message itself. Well, now, I don't think we need to add like a whole field. I think what you've done with D equals one is fine. And that way, when they're signing, the sender signing the message, they can actually reference the dictionary itself, such that when the recipient receives it, they can grab what they're hoping is the same dictionary, but then verify it on validating the signature.
I would imagine that the dictionary, Steve, would be part of the RFC. And so if a new dictionary was released, that would become part of the RFC. And so that reference would be a reference to the RFC's dictionary numbers, not some arbitrary dictionary.
Okay. Yeah. If that's the case, then if it's part of the RFC, then that would mean that there's that would mean we can just say use compression, not even reference a dictionary, I guess. But
yeah, so if we look at the dictionary itself, it's about 604 bytes in this case. And so that dictionary, we wouldn't want to really be shipping all the time because that would negate the offline use of it. Obviously, the dictionary size will grow as we add more terms appropriately into it. But I wanted to go through an example use case to see what the potential benefit was.
Was that the dictionary you were showing?
No, that's decompressing the invite.
Okay.
The dictionary itself is a binary format for Zstandard.
Yeah.
And you can see what's in this current dictionary as of right now is right here. Obviously, we'd want to add other out-of-band data points here.
Yeah, if we took this approach, we'd want to like gather a set and include them in the repo of the commonality of the common things and then have it run against them. So that we could make sure we had that. And there was, so the code to generate the dictionary, the actual source stuff to train it would be present there, et cetera. Kim was just doing this as a experiment to see what it would be like.
Nathan.
So I'm going to ask what I'm hoping is a softball question, which is early on we discussed other formats besides JSON to try to pack and define something that would be tighter as an alternative. Because part of what we've discussed already is that the use case for this is usually kind of this offline peer-to-peer mode, where if you introduce the open world data model, you may also introduce things that break the peer-to-peer model anyway, in which case a redirect is far preferred. So I don't know if you've done any comparison on whether explicitly crafting a data object that only allows for some subset of functionality is better in that use case. But the question is, what do you see as the value of continuing to allow the full spectrum of functionality with the dictionary decompression?
The concept here was to be an add-on instead of an entirely new protocol. And so the concept was to not add a new data format type that required new logic to handle it. In the sense that bolting on compression might be something that we might be interested in doing in other areas. And so adding on compression doesn't change a lot of the logic for handling the message itself.
Well, and this from my side is the part that's interesting is that this pattern is repeatable across other objects besides just this one. And the other thing I would add from Kiva's perspective is we have had a lot of interest in this idea of being able to do fully offline exchange in places that don't have normal network access. So you know, there are some interesting things to being able to do, you know, QR code or screen-based transfer in cases where you might not have devices that do all the things you'd normally expect.
James.
Yeah, one of the questions raised is where the effort is the does it make sense to do now? And one of the things that I would put forward is I think the redirection is where I would put our effort first, especially considering the benefits from a mobile and a deep linking perspective of where we're heading in the community in that direction. That would be one of the other things that I would make sure is considered is that this may be fine, but if you, for instance, receive a link or URL that a user clicks on, is that going to conflict in any kind of way with the compressed imitation here?
I haven't studied the link redirect enough to indicate if that would conflict or not. I don't believe it would conflict, though. It seems like both of these could live side by side fairly easily.
I think I agree. I mostly wanted to raise it as a consideration. And then from I just put forward the, from my perspective, I think the redirect is where I would put the effort first, because I think it has a couple more benefits, but that doesn't discount this as a benefit.
Steven? You still have your hand up. Do you have anything else to add?
Sorry about that. I thought I'd taken it down.
Steve, do you have anything else to add?
Oh, no. Same issue. I forgot to take my hand down. Sorry.
Awesome. At this point, you know, I'm just looking to see where it fits in priorities, or if we're still interested in moving forward on this. Maybe, Sam, does it make sense for us to take some time to consider it and think about it, mull it over before coming up to any decisions on it?
I think we could. One of the points that Timo just made was that I think is useful is that in the offline use case where this would really shine, there's maybe different ways of handling connections, in the sense that rather than scanning a QR code, you could actually the proposed Bluetooth stuff has a way to discover endpoints nearby that speak DIDCOM, in which case you could transfer sort of an initial message over a Bluetooth connection rather than scanning a QR code at all. What that means is that, of course, like managing to have an offline capable but also readable QR code may be a little bit less important in that factor. And I hadn't really considered that before. So, Timo, that's a great point. Nathan, you got a newly up hand.
I just think we need to address the self-contained verification part of the problem of can someone think they're using the right dictionary when they're not. But that's very similar to the, are we using the same Oracle, or are we using different Oracles even though we think we're using the same Oracle problem? So there's probably similar approaches we can take there. It's just something we need to make sure we close the gap on if we add this to the spec.
Sure. And I'm not particularly worried about that, given that this is not something we expect anyone to, like, this is not one you can bring your own dictionary, right? The community gets to decide this, and then it exists. So someone could potentially tamper with it, like get an exchange of dictionary in there that would include in the replacement or the addition of other information like keys. But I think that that's a relatively easily solved aspect. Your point is good in that we need to address it if we do turn this into an RFC, like if we make this a regular thing. Steve, your hand's newly up.
Real quick. Despite my previous concern, I'm very intrigued by the idea of applying compression to the messages, even in a general context. Depending on where everything goes, DIDCOM and otherwise, there's IoT devices, there's small active tags, things like that, that where message size might be an issue. So, I think there's two issues that you've presented. Is one, how do we shrink QR codes, which is good, we need that. And the other is, can we apply the compression concept a little more broadly and help out some of those other cases, like in the IoT world?
This is a good point, Steve. And I think that we've discussed an ideal situation of IoT being, a different, non-JSON form of message at all that could actually help there. And I think that one way or another, Kim, I think it would be great if some of this learning landed in an RFC in the repo, even if we didn't sort of make it a part of an interop profile or something, to sort of preserve the approach. Because I can see, not for DIDCOM v2, but something after DIDCOM v2, being able to lean on a technique like this would be really useful. And though you're not proposing custom dictionaries, that could actually be something that allows for very efficient specific use cases if people could actually specify what their own dictionary is. And in that case, you could take a message being sent by an IoT device And if you strip out all the regular pieces of it, it would end up being absolutely tiny using a compression mechanism like this, which would be really cool. So I think, Steve, that's a really good point. So let's let this, we're out of time. So let's let this simmer and talk about it. And I think that now that the concept's been in people's brains, we've had some good discussion about it, we can see if this is something that we feel like pursuing or not. So perhaps we could revisit it sort of briefly in conversation either next week or the week after or so to see if we have a sort of a reaction to it after you've presented it, Kim. So I appreciate that. Also, Timo, we didn't get to your DITOff pre-credential topic. Is that something that we can talk about next week?
Yeah, sure. It's not in a hurry. I just wanted some opinions on it from others.
Well, I'm particularly curious about those sorts of topics too. So, sorry, excited to talk about that. Excellent. Any last words before we end our meeting today? Thank you all for being here. I hope your week is a good one. And we will talk to you later. Also, lobby if you're in the US for your House of Representatives rep to approve the daylight savings time permit thing. Awesome. Sorry to get political. Thanks, folks. See ya.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks, everyone.